61. Sebastian hung over the edge of the cockpit. The wind buffeted him, flapping his jacket wildly about his body, whipping his hair into a black tangle. With his usual dexterity, Sebastian had managed to drop the binoculars overboard. They were the property of Flynn Patrick O'Flynn, and Sebastian knew that he would be expected to pay for them. This spoiled Sebastian's enjoyment of the flight to some extent. He already owed Flynn a little over £300. Rosa would have something to say also. However, the loss of the binoculars was no handicap. The aircraft was flying too low, and was so unstable that the unaided eye was much more effective. From a height of 500 feet, the mangrove forest looked like a fluffy, overstuffed mattress, a sickly fever green in colour, with the channels and the waterways between them dark gunmetal veins that flashed the sunlight back like a heliograph. The clouds of white egrets that rose in alarm as the aircraft approached looked like drifts of torn paper scraps. A fish eagle hung suspended in silent flight ahead of them. The wide span of its wings flared at the tips like the fingers of a hand. It dipped away, sliding past the aircraft's wingtip, so close that Sebastian saw the fierce yellow eyes in its white hooded head. Sebastian laughed with delight, and then grabbed at the side of the cockpit to steady himself as the machine rocked violently under him. This was the pilot's method of attracting Sebastian's attention, and Sebastian wished he would think up some other way of doing it. He looked back angrily, shouting in the howl of wind and engine, "Watch it, you stupid Dago!" De Silva was gesticulating wildly, his pink mouth working under the black moustache, his eyes wild behind the panes of his goggles, his right hand stabbing urgently out over the starboard wing. Sebastian saw it immediately on the wide waterway. The launch was so glaringly conspicuous that he wondered why he had not seen it before, and then he recalled that his attention had been concentrated on the terrain directly beneath the aircraft, and he excused himself. Yet there was little to justify De Silva's excitement, he thought. This was no battle cruiser. It was a tiny vessel of perhaps 25 feet. Quickly he ran his eyes down the channel, following it to the open sea in the blue distance. It was empty. He glanced back at the pilot and shook his head, but De Silva's excitement had, if anything, increased. He was making another frenzied hand signal that Sebastian could not understand. To save argument, Sebastian nodded in agreement, and instantly the machine dropped away under him so that Sebastian's belly was left behind, and he clutched desperately at the side of the cockpit once more. In a shallow turning dive, De Silva took the machine down and then levelled out with the landing wheels almost brushing the tops of the mangroves. They rushed towards the channel, and as the last mangroves whipped away under them, De Silva eased the nose down still farther, and they dropped to within a few feet of the surface of the water. It was a display of fine flying that was completely wasted on Sebastian. He was cursing De Silva quietly, his eyes starting from their sockets. A mile ahead of them, across the open water, bobbed the overladen launch. It was only a few feet below their own level, and they raced towards it with the wash of the propeller blowing a squall of ripples across the surface behind them. "My God!" The blasphemy was wrung from Sebastian in his distress. "He's going to fly right into it!" It was an opinion that seemed to be shared by the crew of the launch. As the machine roared in on them, they began to abandon ship. Sebastian saw two men leap from the high-piled load of timber and hit the water with small white splashes. At the last second, Da Silva lifted the plane, and they hopped over the launch. For a fleeting instant, Sebastian stared at a range of 15 feet into the face of the German naval officer, who crouched down over the tiller bar at the stern of the launch. Then they were past, and climbing sharply, banking and turning back. Sebastian saw the launch had rounded too, and that her crew were clambering aboard and splashing around her sides. Once more, the aircraft dropped towards the channel, but De Silva had throttled back, and the engine was blurbing under half power. He levelled out 50 feet above the water and flew sedately, keeping away from the launch and well towards the northern side of the channel. "What are you doing?" Sebastian mouthed the question at De Silva. In reply, the pilot made a sweeping gesture with his right hand at the thick bank of mangroves alongside. Puzzled, Sebastian stared into the mangroves. What was the fool doing? Surely he didn't think that... There was a hump of high ground on the bank, a hump that rose perhaps 150 feet above the level of the river. They came up to it. Like a hunter following a wounded buffalo, moving carelessly through thin, scattered bush which could not possibly give cover to such a large animal, and then suddenly coming face to face with it, so close that he sees the minute detail of crenellation on the massive bosses of the horns, sees the blood dripping from moist black nostrils, and the dull furnace glare of the piggy little eyes. In the same fashion, Sebastian found the Blucher. She was so close, he could see the pattern of rivets on her plating, the joints in the planking of her foredeck, the individual strands of the canopy of camouflage netting spread over her. He saw the men on her bridge, and the gun crews behind the pom-poms, and the Maxim machine guns on the balconies of her upper works. From her squatting turrets, her big guns gaped at him with hungry mouths, revolving to follow the flight of the machine. She was monstrous, grey and sinister among the mangroves, crouching in her lair, and Sebastian cried aloud in surprise and alarm, a sound without shape or coherence, and at that same moment the engine of the aeroplane bellowed in full power, as De Silva thrust the throttle wide and hauled the joystick back into his crotch. As the aircraft rocketed upwards, the deck of the Blucher erupted in a thunderous volcano of flame. Flame flew in great bell-shaped ejaculations from the muzzles of her 9-inch guns. Flame spat viciously from the multi-barrel pom-poms and the machine guns on her upper works. Around the little aircraft the air boiled and hissed, disrupted, churned into violent turbulence by the passage of the big shells. Something struck the plane, and she was whirled upwards like a burning leaf from a garden bonfire. Wing over wing she rolled, her engine surging wildly, her rigging groaning and creaking at the strain. Sebastian was flung forward, the bridge of his nose cracked against the edge of the cockpit, and instantly twin jets of blood spurted from his nostrils to douse the front of his jacket. The machine stood on her tail, propeller clawing ineffectually at the air, engine wailing in over-rev. Then she dropped away on one wing, and one side swooped sickeningly downwards. De Silva fought her, feeling the sloppiness of the stall in her controls come alive again as she regained airspeed. The fluffy tops of the mangroves rushed up to meet him, and desperately he tried to ease her off. She was trying to respond, the fabric wrinkling along her wings as they reflexed to enormous pleasure. He felt her lurch again as she touched the top branches, heard above the howl of the engine, the faint, crackling brush of the vegetation against her belly, and then suddenly, miraculously, she was clear, flying straight and level, climbing slowly up and away from the hungry swamp. She was sluggish and heavy, and there was something loose under her. It banged and thumped and slapped in the slipstream, jarring the whole fuselage. De Silva could not dare to manoeuvre her. He held her on the course she had chosen, easing her nose slightly upward, slowly gaining precious altitude. At 1,000 feet, he brought her round in a wide, gentle turn to the south, and banging and thumping, one wing heavy, she staggered drunkenly through the sky towards her rendezvous with Flynn O'Flynn.